Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Greg Olson here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFL SundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day, just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by TheraOne CBD, NFL Sunday Ticket, and BetOnline.ag. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius. We are recording after a very frustrating Game 1 loss. Lakers fell to the Blazers 100-93 in a game in which they shot 5-for-32 from three-point range and didn't shoot that much better from the free throw line, especially in the fourth quarter. Darius, how much of this game is just like we missed open shots?
Some of it. I mean, it's an important. It's not the entire game. It's certainly super important.
But it's the type of shot, like these. So many of them are open looks. Did you see how much they were packing the paint?
Yes.
This impacts LeBron's drives to the rim. This impacts AD. Well, right?
There's a lot of strategy stuff that happened in this game that, if it continues, will be telling. And cuts into the Lakers' ability to, I don't want to say to win the series, but it makes their lives so much harder, right? And so, like, for one, Portland got away with playing like Whiteside and Nurkic together for big minutes. And the Lakers are typically not. So this has been a theme during the entire year that you and I have discussed when we've talked about the types of teams that the Lakers struggle against offensively, right? And particularly LeBron, but I think this funnels into Anthony Davis as well, in that when the paint is too packed, the Lakers are built to pressure the front of the rim. And when the paint is filled with big bodies, that just becomes harder. And you need ways to loosen up the defense. And the best way to do that is by hitting outside shots. And Portland seemed determined to give the Lakers those outside shots. And that was clearly a part of their game plan. So, and the Lakers did not make them pay at all. In fact, they were so negative from behind the arc that it only emboldened the Blazers more to continue to pack the paint, even when the Lakers played lineups that, in theory, need to be defended from behind the arc. Right?
In theory.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, like when the Lakers went on their nice little spurt during the first half to close that gap, like Markieff Morris was on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. He had a really good first half and he hit a three and then he attacked a closeout and got that nice little up and under and one with that nice, like, righty layup. And there were some things that were happening out there where when the Lakers shift to those sort of stretch four lineups with either Kuzma playing power forward or Morris playing power forward and with AD at center, those are the lineups that are supposed to spread out the defense in order to open up driving lanes for LeBron. The Blazers, though, continued to pack the paint. They did it and they did it with their wings and with their guards and they did it with everyone, right? And the Lakers simply were not able to make them pay by hitting enough three-pointers, right? So 5 for 34 is a horrendous number. Like, the last three or four of those were sort of, like, in crunch time where, honestly, the Lakers sort of started to rush up threes. Like, they had a couple of bad possessions at the end. And then they fired off a couple of threes as well. And so let's just say that they were 5 for 30 in, like, real moments of the game. That's still a horrendous number, right? If two or three or four or more of those threes go in, imagine if they're 9 for 30. That's still terrible.
It's still terrible.
But that changes, and we
win the game.
Mm-hmm. But that changes the outcome of that likely changes the outcome of the game. And if those threes come at a particular time in the game, it might actually loosen things up for the Lakers in a way that has tangible domino effects for them.
Sure.
But instead it was the opposite of that. And like I said, their continued misses only emboldened the Blazers to pack the paint even more. And even if one or two of those did go in at that point, that wasn't going to change their mind.
No, they're going to do the same thing in game two.
Yes.
They have
to. And they should.
They should, and they have to. And that's why, that's part of the look, like the preview we did. I told you, oh man, I love that pod because we really got into the weeds about details of defending Dame, which I thought we did. Like, I thought we did an okay job on him in this game. He's still going to put up his numbers, right?
They fouled too much. Yes. They fouled too much, and I think that was one of the things that was really big for the Blazers in terms of being a bellwether for them offensively. You know, when the Lakers really started to put the clamps on them defensively at the end of the first quarter and then even into the second quarter.
Mm-hmm. We did really well in the non-Dame minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was a point where the Blazers hadn't hit a field goal in the second quarter, but they had hit 10 mm-hmm. free throws. Right. So you can't. You simply cannot allow them to prop up their offense in other ways when you actually hold them down in the ways that you plan to.
Well, even then, they scored 100 points, man. You hold the Portland Trailblazers to 100 points, you need to win that game. Right? And that's why the point that I was making was, like, I loved in that in the last pod how we were got into all the details of this. I don't know how many different ways I'm going to have to say, like, you can't shoot 5 for 32 from three and shoot the way that we did from the free throw line, especially in that fourth quarter, that because everything that Portland's doing collapses if we shoot below average from three. Not even average, certainly not even good. But if we just shoot, because it's the types of threes as a result of them collapsing in the paint, as a result of them playing two fairly slow-footed bigs and taking away some, like, we shot very poorly on our putbacks, in part because they've got a lot of size down there contesting it. It wasn't just Gary Trent and CJ and Dame trying to drop down and sandwich. There were two big lineups, right? They had some size around the hoop to kind of prevent those putbacks from being successful. But all of it collapses if we, like, I feel like if most teams in this bubble got those 32 threes that we got, they make 13 of them, 14 of them on an average night. Because it's not just percentage, it's like what types of threes, how good are the looks that you're getting. And that was what was so maddening about it, especially when it's coming from guys who are not providing ball handling ability, who are not providing any other degree of shot creation. If you don't get anything at all, you're smiling at me. You see how I have to dance around a little bit. But like, if you're not giving anything, like, what is it that those guys are providing? And then it comes to, like, who do you turn to? Do we turn to Dion? Do we turn to J.R. Smith? Neither of whom were in the rotation in this first game. That just can't happen again.
No, so, like, I'm, you were very politic there. Like, Danny Green and KCP are the Lakers 3-and-D players, right? I thought Danny did okay defensively. I thought he did okay, right? Like, that was a question that you and I had on the last pod about how well Danny Green was going to be able to hold up defensively. He started the game and he had a couple of just sort of, you know, normal looking defensive possessions against Dame. He had some okay defensive possessions against CJ. CJ got some against Danny as well, but CJ is a wonderful offensive player. He's going to get his against most defensive guys. So I wasn't necessarily concerned about that. But Danny Green offensively is paid to shoot the ball. KCP offensively is paid to shoot the ball. You know, Danny Green was 4 for 12. He was 2 for 8 from 3. That's a bad night. Another make, though, from 3, and he's 3 for 8. Two more makes, and he's 50%. Like, that feels like a lot. Danny Green did not inspire confidence tonight, just by the way that he was shooting the ball. I did not expect really any of his threes to go in, which is a bad place to be in with Danny Green. It was just a feeling that as the game went on, his shots were not going to fall. And that's a tough look, because if I'm feeling that from my couch, then on the court, you know, the players are sort of sensing that as well. There was a play late in the game where Danny was wide open in the corner and LeBron looked right off of him and passed to Caruso at the top of the key. Now, someone in my mentions was basically saying he thought LeBron was playing, like, ahead of the defense, and he thought the defense was going to rotate to Danny, but instead they stuck with Caruso. But if that's the case, then the defense stuck with Alex Caruso and did not rotate to Danny Green. However way you play that out, that's bad, right? Either Bron looked him off or the defense didn't even rotate to him. Either way, that's bad. But KCP was 0 for 9, man. He was 0 for 9, and none of his shots... None of his two-point shots were really quality looks, and all of his and some of his threes were just like, you're paid to make those. I'm sorry, like, I don't want to bury him here, but you can't go 0 for 9. you can't play 29 minutes and what, make a free throw and score a single point. That can't be your output if you're a starting guard in the NBA who is in theory in the starting lineup to provide some scoring ballast, right? Like, you're not out there as Rajon Rondo who is providing these other things, right? Or you're not out there and you're Alex Caruso and you're playing this more well-rounded floor game, right? Like, you're not bringing the ball up, you're not initiating offensive sets, you're not running a bunch of pick and rolls, you're spotting up as a shooter and you're attacking closeouts. He needed to be better tonight, and he wasn't. And that's a tough look. You know, and so when your starting guards combine to go 4 for 21,
and that's their role.
And that's their role, and they're the only they are the 3-point shooting in your starting lineup. And from behind the arc, they combine to go 2 for 13. Like, look, man, like, you're playing the Blazers. They've got Dame and CJ on the other side. The expectation isn't that you're going to match them, but the expectation is that you're going to chip into what they do a little bit in order to give the rest of your team enough balance so that LeBron and AD can be better versions of themselves, right? Because right. LeBron and AD were doing their jobs in order to get you guys the types of looks that you needed to make, and they didn't go down tonight. And there's no other way to put it, man. There's no sugarcoating that. Like, and it's not being mean to just say it. That's just the facts. They needed to be better, and they weren't. You hope they'll be better on Thursday. We'll see.
So you tweeted something out about you're optimistic, regardless of the result tonight. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll look ahead to game two and see your reasons for optimism, as I see them as well, as frustrating as tonight was. I think the shooting will normalize. Yeah, we'll get into it. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. From tight muscles, tough workouts, signs of aging, to simply making it through each busy day, everyone understands how it feels to be tense and sore. So everyone can benefit from TheraOne CBD products. Started by Dr. Jason Wersland, Therabody exists to provide you with the best scientifically validated natural solutions to help soothe your body and relax your mind. It started with the revolutionary Theragun percussive therapy device when Dr. Jason saw the benefits of using CBD in his treatments. He created TheraOne to bring you CBD products done right. A lot of CBD products claim to be organic, but still contain up to 30% filler, and these fillers are potentially toxic. TheraOne tests their products 4 times before they get to you. Every product is USDA certified organic, grown in the USA, and their CBD extracts are the highest quality available anywhere. Use TheraOne's warming lotion in your morning routine, the cooling lotion or massage oil to recover, body balm for targeted relief, and sleep tincture to drift into a deep night's sleep. And now, through Labor Day, Monday, September 7th, TheraOne is offering our listeners a buy one, get one free for all TheraOne products. But you've got to go to theragun.com/bluewire. That's theragun.com/bluewire. If you don't love what you get from TheraOne, send it back for a full refund within 30 days of purchase. This is not something that TheraOne is likely to do again. Buy one, get one free at theragun.com/bluewire, but only until Labor Day. Go right now to theragun.com/bluewire. Sundays are coming back with the NFL. With NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live, out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices. Plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels, never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFLSundayTicket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word. So yeah, man, 5 for 32 is not going to happen every night, although it's happened with alarming frequency in the bubble, at least those really bad nights. And both Green and KCP, the nature of them as shooters, and this is something that we said going into this, they are very hot and cold. So if both of them go cold at the same time as they were tonight, that's where we can run into some issues. But by and large, they will not shoot 5-for-32 particularly often. What do you see going forward? Not just reasons for optimism, but just like how now that we've got one game under our belts, it's not all theoretical anymore. Where do we go from here?
I mean, look, man. The reason why I said that I'm optimistic is because the Lakers honestly played about as poorly as they could play this game. They went on one good run. It was fueled by defense. It was fueled by when they went smaller. And we can talk as much about how the other team didn't play well either, but they won the game, right? And so they're probably feeling good about themselves and also thinking we didn't play that well and we won the game. Well, I honestly don't think the Lakers could have played much worse offensively, at least. And if you're starting all the way at the bottom, like, I just think things are going to be a little bit better the next game. I thought that, you know, there were just so many little things that the Lakers did poorly that I think the Blazers contributed to that. But I also think that some of that was just the Lakers just missing shots and not playing well. Like, look, man, Anthony Davis went 8-for-24. Danny Green was 4-for-12. KCP was 0-for-9. Kuzma was 5-for-14. Alex Caruso was 1-for-6, right? Even Dwight Howard was 2-for-5. Dwight Howard shot like 70% this season, right? Mm-hmm. And granted, Dwight's going up against a big dude in Whiteside. And so Whiteside mm-hmm. is going to challenge him in ways right. sort of similar to the way that like Boban has given Dwight some weird issues this year just because he's just a massive human being. Whiteside's just a big dude who's got long arms and challenges shots. But I just think, man, like, AD's going to hit a couple more of those mid-range jumpers. Some of those chippies are going to fall. I think the Lakers are going to find ways to get him the ball more often and let him go to work. I actually thought the Lakers played a style with Anthony Davis where they were anticipating him getting double teamed more, and he just didn't. And I actually think that AD was probably thinking the double is coming, or he just looked a bit more hesitant than what I thought he might, considering the types of coverages that he saw. And he can just play better. LeBron can play better. Like, and I know that the guys on Portland side can say the same, but I thought the Lakers' defensive game plan was sound. I thought they executed it well. Yep. I thought it was clear that LeBron was engaged defensively. I thought Anthony Davis was engaged defensively. I thought
our rotations were good. We didn't give up a lot of open shots.
I thought Alex Caruso was really good defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, on both on Dame and on CJ. Like, Dame cooked AC like in the first half, but like in that first shift where they were matched up, I thought Dame really took it to
he did,
and they did a lot of what you said that they would do in our preview pod, where they worked Dame off of the ball a lot more when against Caruso Alex and they ran him off a bunch of screens. But Caruso held up pretty well in high screen and roll actions. He got burned a little bit in isolation, but Dame's going to do that to almost any defender, right? You can't hand check. You can't put your hands on him. And so I thought the Lakers played well defensively, just like you said. They only gave up 100 points. The Blazers actually came into this game as the top-ranked offense in the bubble. Right. So they were like, they posted an offensive efficiency of like 120 or something crazy. Like,
and they'll be better on offense too. I just don't think that, their shot quality was not as good as our shot quality. And over a 7-game series, that tends to even out. It's just, you know, got to make open shots.
You've got to make the shots. And look, I'm going to say this point blank, and as straightforward as it can be said. If the Lakers shoot this poorly over the course of a series, they will
lose.
Yeah,
we're going to lose. Yeah.
And that's just what it is. And if the Lakers play, look, man, the Lakers were one of like two teams or three teams who were in the top five of offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency, like for most of the season, right? Like it was them. It was like the Bucks. The Clippers hovered around there. The Raptors hovered around there. But like you're talking about the best teams in the league. If the Lakers are suddenly going to be one of the worst offenses in the league, then guess what? They're not going to be very good.
And this isn't going to last that long, right?
Yeah.
Bro, we scored 37 points in the second half. And the Blazers are not a good defensive team. And I'm so frustrated. They need to make shots. I think what we do well and what we did well in this game on the offensive end was crash the boards. We had a 17-5 advantage on the offensive boards. And I think that that's going to be probably close to the case pretty much every game. And that's somewhere where we can really, we can build off of that. Because again, a 9-for-32 night is probably a victory for us as opposed to a 5-for-32 night. And 9-for-32 still is not that good, as we said earlier. So I do think that the Lakers' ability to put pressure on the rim and ability to necessitate that completely collapsed paint, like we were still getting offensive boards and we were still doing damage on the inside. It's just when that second ingredient is totally missing, it's like flying a plane with one wing. It's just not going to work.
I think that there are schematic adjustments, too, that Vogel is going to need to make offensively. And I don't necessarily mean from a rotation standpoint, although we should talk about some rotation stuff. But I do think that they need to try to get AD the ball more on the move.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
I liked
our ball screen stuff that we did today. I thought like our ball screen game with LeBron and AD worked really well. It'd be nice to see more of that.
I would like to see more of that. I'd also like to see them do more of what they did in the pick and roll in the Celtics game. And in games after when they played the Celtics, like when they played the Bucks, Portland plays a drop coverage, like in the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see them sort of use, like take a play from the Celtics playbook where they basically do a screen and roll, but when the roll man goes down the paint, he's basically just trying to pick off the center who mm-hmm. is in drop coverage, right? And LeBron got a layup and a dunk against the Bucks that way because that's basically the coverage that the Bucks play. I think they need to be even more aggressive in transition. I put this in my game preview for game one, but and this is a stat from Cleaning the Glass, Ben Falk's site. But the Blazers were one of the worst transition defense teams off of live rebounds mm-hmm. this year. Both Nurkic and Whiteside are sort of slow-footed. They do not change ends well. I do think LeBron needs to engage more off of the backboards and really look to push the pace a little bit more. I think that mm-hmm. AD and JaVale, especially if JaVale's going to start the game, man, like he needs to use those springy legs and he needs to try to rim run every mm-hmm. single time. Like he needs to basically have one goal in mind. I'm going to beat Nurkic up the court. Like
mm-hmm. That's a great way of putting it.
And he needs to run that way every single possession. That the ball comes off the rim, if he rebounds, he needs to be looking for the outlet, and he needs to all in one motion get his butt up the floor. And I think the Lakers need to push the ball a little bit more against this team. You know, not necessarily to play faster, but to get them in scramble mode. The Blazers are not a great defensive team. But if you walk the ball up the court and then you allow them to pack the paint against you, it's only going to put more pressure on LeBron and AD to make shots from 15 feet and out. And then when they do crash and they do collapse, then the Lakers shooters are going to start to feel that pressure a little bit more. Like, it'd be great if some of the threes that they got were like open in transition, right? Where they're running.
Get
the
Danny
lane.
Green stepping into some of those threes, right? Like, he's great at that. And, so, yeah, that's a good point.
There are things that Vogel can stress and adjust from game one to game two that have nothing to necessarily do with his lineups, right? Like, there are ways to play more two-man game with AD and LeBron. Do it from the wing instead of the top of the floor, mm-hmm. right? Like play more two-man on single-side basketball where the floor is spaced and like where there's three guys opposite side, and then you're running more side screen and roll action with Bron and AD. There are things that there are just little tweaks that they can do that are already part of their normal offense, but they didn't get to many of those actions this game. Mm-hmm. Instead, it was a lot of top of the floor stuff where the whole defense is in front of you and help can come from every angle, right? And I just thought that the Lakers handled a lot of that stuff poorly, mostly by missing shots. But in general, I think that they can change the geometry of the floor some in order to get better looks, right? And this is what the playoffs are, man. Like, you're not going to win every single game, especially when the Lakers have not been playing at their best to this point. And this is where the adjustments start to come in.
Sure.
Like, was I super encouraged by this game? Like, not necessarily, but there were things where I thought, man, like, one of the reasons why this is so frustrating, right, was because I just thought they're actually just better than this. They really played below a level that you would expect for as hard as they were actually playing. And if there's a reason to be encouraged, it's that's rarely been the case this season, right?
Sure.
There have been games where they've played hard and not played well, but that doesn't happen too often.
That's a great point. I think a lot of this may come down to this is the danger of waiting as long as we did to ramp up. We faced a team that has played pretty much every game in the bubble has been a do-or-die game for the Blazers. Whether they've won or not, it's been a very crucial game. And so they started that game in fourth gear, and we started that game in first gear. And I don't think it was a coincidence we ended up down double digits early on in the game as a result of that. I do think that this has given us our wake-up call. I like your idea about side ball screens. That's somewhere where, rather than doing that up top, having that on the side. But again, that you'll get zoned up, you'll get strong side zones on that, and it all comes down to, all right, well, are they going to make the shot on the skip pass, right? Because there are things schematically that we can do and all of that, but at the end of the day, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I wish I had more analysis about this game, and I was happy with how we defended, and that's something that we can build off of. But any version of this high ball screen, okay, we're going to roll the basket with AD because they got to play a drop because they got slow-footed bigs and they got to tag hard on that from the weak side. Okay, then skip pass over to one of our shooters. Are they going to make the shot?
Yeah.
That's really what it comes to. Every version of this comes down to, and it's not just KCP, it's not just Danny Green. It's LeBron. AD was 0 for 5 from 3. Caruso's shot very poorly in the bubble. I'd feel better about the, oh, this is a one-time thing type thing had we played better in the bubble. But we haven't played, like, a good game in 5 months. You know?
Well, when you say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I do say it that way. You got anything else, man, before we send it on home?
Yeah, I do. I just want to throw this in there. There's a reason why Dion Waiters and J.R. Smith didn't play this game. Mm-hmm. The reason is because they have not shown that they're good enough defensively to play in this series, in the minutes that they played up to when this series started.
Especially right? With the bubble, yeah.
Like, if I actually thought that Waiters could hold up defensively, even against, like, Gary Trent Jr., that I would say, like, give him a chance, you know? Mm-hmm. But Waiters just, he just wasn't there defensively. Now, maybe Vogel will go to him next game, right? Especially if KCP or Danny Green start 0 for 3 or 0 for 4 again. It may necessitate, like, a quicker hook with those guys. And then you may need to expand your bench, right? I'll be very interested to see. You know, Rondo has apparently been cleared to play. Like, we'll see if he gets thrown into the mix and into the fire some, and if playoff Rondo can rise like a phoenix from the ashes of a broken thumb, right? Like, we'll see. I do think, though, that in the end, when it comes right down to it, it's not just about necessarily making shots and everything else, because it is that. But the guys and Vogel, this was a kick in the mouth. And I'll be one of the things that I've thought about this team this year, and we've talked about it a lot, is that they have been resilient and they have shown a certain mental toughness this season. And then if there's a time to be resilient and a time to show your mental toughness, it's when you're down 0-1 in a playoff series, right? No home court advantage for either team, right?
And right. So, that's the thing, is like the gym, there being no crowd, anything like that, any of the what makes this weird, it's the same for everybody. You know,
that's right.
Like the one thing I will say, man, about especially Deion, is we're going to have to put the ball in the bucket. And we're going to have to probably not be completely reliant on LeBron James to create every shot that we get. So maybe that's Rondo, right? Maybe Rondo comes in to do that. But Waiters is also a really good spot-up shooter. Now, I understand where you're coming from. You're not wrong. They will hunt that. I feel like there are some like second quarter lineups where... Yeah, you know, what, like maybe we can get away with it. Just if KCP and Danny Green stay this cold, it's going to force the hand there.
For yeah,
both Deion and JR. Like there's only so long that this can go on offensively from a shooting standpoint before it becomes yeah, but this is a bigger problem. You know?
No, that's right. And I only said what I said because I thought that Vogel looked at this game clearly as a game where he thought his defense was playing good enough. And I think that that gets us back to the point that you made earlier, that the Blazers scored 100 points. Mm-hmm. That's a game where the Lakers only needed to score 101 to win, and they only scored 93, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you play this game out, you know, 100 times... Maybe the Lakers don't shoot as poorly and they win some of these, right? My bet is that Vogel thought, these are the guys I can trust defensively, and I've seen them hit enough shots over the course of this season that I'm going to let them go out there and go, rather than say, let's put Deion Waiters or J.R. Smith in the game. That was really the gist of what I was trying to get to. Now, sure. The point that you made is definitely right on point, and that at some point, if it gets to that point, I should say that you can't cut off your nose to spite your face, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're going to have to say, well, we're going to have to give up some defense maybe in order to get more productive offensive guys out there. Let me just say this. On Thursday, it'd be very nice if Danny Green hit his first three, and if KCP got to the rim and maybe, or hit a little pull-up jumper. The Lakers didn't run that handoff set once the entire game, man. And against a drop coverage I would have liked to have seen it. There's just stuff that they just didn't really do today. And I don't know if that what like what that was. The game just went in a different direction for them. But I can guarantee you that when Vogel and this coaching staff are crunching the tape on this, and you know they're doing it right now, right this second, right as we're recording this pod, that they're going to probably be kicking themselves about the things that they see on tape that they could have tweaked or done a little bit differently. And I expect adjustments next game. I do.
All right. Let's certainly hope so. And I mean, again, I'd love to add more. You added a lot more from the X's and O's standpoint. Like, I'm happy with the shots we got, man. Like, just got to make your shots. So let's
hope we can do that. It's a make or miss league. It's a make or miss league.
So let's hope we do some making in on Thursday in game two. Certainly gonna, they got our attention. The Portland Trailblazers certainly got our attention. All right, guys. Until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Campbell in and out. The ball is tipped and it's saved. 3 seconds left. Here's Van Exel. This is for the win. He got it.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. An amazing performance by Kobe. Shot with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me? I know Red Auerbach is rolling over.
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
How strong was that? A triple on a fall away in the corner with a shot clock down.
Lakers by three.
Ryan spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
And the critical part was Pietrus jogging back. Didn't bounce the floor. It's a two-for-one situation.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Powell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant.
Unbelievable. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?